Gloria Steinem was asked in an interview how she came to be in the women's movement. Her answer, in part, she wondered what took her so long. Her father had left. Her mother was ill for a while. She cared for her parent. She pursued a degree at a prestigious college. She worked in India for 2 years, struggled to find a full-time job in journalism. She was a liberated woman when liberated in the elite circles meant free to spend a husband's money. But she says she needed an ethic that spoke to revolution and not reform. Gloria Steinem writes that one of her turning points came at public hearings held in New York over abortion. The legislature was considering changes to the law. The witnesses, 14 men and a nun. Some women thought that perhaps women should be heard, women who had had abortions and had experience in the underbelly of illegal abortions. She writes it was her aha moment. Why do women have to hide this? Something she had hidden as well. Gloria Steinem went on to be one of the leaders of the women's movement, a founder of Ms. Magazine and the Ms. Foundation, which continues to fund political efforts, as well as Take Your Daughters to Work Day. She was a founder of the National Women's Political Caucus, the Women's Action Alliance, the Coalition of Labor Union Women. Among her books, Revolution from Within, 1992, a book that looked at self and work as circles of mutual support and connectedness with the goal of completion. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for that thoughtful introduction. Thank you.
We had an interesting conversation here yesterday. We, the three women and two men, said, you know, we all asked each other, are you a feminist? And the three women said no. No, excuse me. Two women said no, and the high school student said yes. I was surprised at that. The two men said yes, by the way. Mm-hmm. I was surprised at that. And it made us, again, question what the word means to people. Mm-hmm. What happened to the word? What do you think it is that continues to be a discussion, right? That continues to be a debate. What's a feminist? Oh, I'm not one.
Well, it depends on two things. Yeah, right. Whether people go to the dictionary and find out it just means somebody who believes in the full social, economic, political equality of males and females, then they're much more likely to say yes. If they've been listening to Rush Limbaugh talk about feminazis, they are clearly likely to say no. And in between there are degrees of punishment, in a way, for saying you're a feminist. Because if you say, as a female human being, I'm for equal pay for me, you're talking about reform. If you say you're a feminist and that means you're for equal pay for all women, it's a major redistribution of wealth, you know, and people get a little uncomfortable. So, you know, there is both a tremendous reward for saying it and some punishment for saying it. There is misunderstanding. I mean, some people are saying no because they don't know what it means. And some people are saying no because they do know what it means.
What are your goals? Where do you want to go? I mean, how would you articulate it?
Well, in many ways. I mean, I think we can look at any area and see what would happen. Perhaps the area of most difficulty for the largest number of women is having a double role, that is, having a job at home and an unpaid job at home and a paid job outside the home. So clearly what we need to do is look at societal changes that almost every other advanced country has, you know, beat us at, such as some national form of childcare, more flexible work schedules so that both parents, mothers and fathers of babies and small children, can have work outside the home and still be at home some of the time. And also just the vision that that's possible. Because when I go on campuses now, I still get young women standing up and saying, how can I combine career and family? And I just long for the day when young men stand up and ask that question. There's been a rash of articles about this choice, so-called, and women staying home for a while or going back into the labor force. Not one of those articles has talked about fathers. Not
doing
one.
The same thing.
Yeah, not one. And children, I mean, you know, it's not a punishment. It's a blessing to raise children. Men are missing a kind of very intimate relationship with their children because they're not being included in this discussion. And women have not yet gotten angry enough about this craziness. You know, they still think somehow they have to solve it by themselves.
Black power activists have said for years that racism, that why is it always black people that have to sit down and discuss racism? It's really the white people who should be sitting mm-hmm. there discussing racism. It's
yes, no, absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. Yes, it is the same thing. If we don't understand white privilege, we're never going to you know, really understand what the problem is. And the naming, it's more difficult to criticize the powerful than it is to assume that what the less powerful want is to imitate. It's a sort of imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, I suppose. But the truth of the matter is that the civil rights movement wasn't saying that black people wanted to live exactly like white middle class people. Thank you very much. And, you know, women are not saying that either. We're trying to transform and humanize power relationships in general and roles and do away with roles in general.
Let me bring in some of our listeners who have some comments or questions for Gloria Steinem. Jennifer's in Seattle. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
Yes, thank you. As someone who does consider myself a feminist and a feminist academic, I frequently find myself sort of on the other side of the argument with some other, you know, self-proclaimed feminists, in that since I study India, I find myself defending Indian women and sort of non-American women in general for some of the issues that I think come up in the media all the time, like the veil, like segregation, like not going to work, having arranged marriages. And, you know, I feel distressed that so much of the discussion in the U.S. about women sort of takes on these third world women as their other and sort of tries to talk about problems that women outside the U.S. have, when in fact we don't even understand those problems entirely. We're not able to talk to those women so frequently, and we don't look at the problems that we have here in the so-called modern enlightened West. I wanted to see what Ms. Steinem had to say about all of that.
Well, I do think it's interesting what you say, because I do think there's an effort to make American women feel so lucky that we stop organizing, you know, to try to say, oh, look how much worse off someone over there is, when in fact this country is way, way, way down the list in the political representation or maternal mortality or flexible jobs. You know, it's a distraction. It's trying to say you should be grateful, shut up. You know, but within the women's movement, I haven't had the same experience as you have, Jennifer, because it seems to me that there is an understanding that what we are there to do across cultures and borders is not to impose an idea of what liberation looks like, but to say, what is it that you want support in, you know, to always put the decision in the hands of the woman who is in that place that only she can know.
So Jennifer, you're positing it's that American women are taking it as an either or, and that we should ask the question of what the person behind the veil does want.
Not only American women, but also the media. I mean, I'm so sick of seeing the pictures of women in Afghanistan in the veil. I mean, it's become such a powerful symbol of oppression and of everything that we should fight. And I mean, the Taliban is a very extreme example. It's hard to fight against it, but still, I mean, I think the basic principle is there, which is, well, we're still representing these women. We have no idea what their lives are like necessarily, and we have no idea whose picture we're looking at. So it's not only American women. I mean, I think it's become part of political discourse. It's become part of the mainstream media, where it's enough to flash a picture of someone, you know, in a veil to get a reaction from the audience, which is, oh, you know, how terrible.
No, I see what you mean. No, I do agree with that. And I think the most horrendous example of it is that George Bush has had the gall to claim that he was going into Afghanistan on behalf of women. Excuse me. You know, I mean, it just is outrageous. It makes me so angry. So it really, really is outrageous. And as the caller is saying, for a woman to wear a veil may very well be at a minimum something she has to do to be safe.
Jennifer, thank you for your call. So as the movement looks forward, and if it is a movement, did it did it make sense to be a women's movement, a black liberation movement, a Latino liberation movement? Did the gender politics that we all hear about and the interest group politics, did it serve in the end? Mm-hmm. Did it help strengthen people?
Yes, because you have to become visible first. You know, I mean, it's as if you have I usually do this by gestures. I can't do it by gestures on the radio. But, you know, you have a group that's up high and then you have another group that's down low. If you bring them together, if you integrate them at that point, they're back in a hierarchy. You have to focus on the group that's down low, make it visible, empower it, state its different values, make it a transformational group until it gets up at a level with the other one, and then when you bring them together, you get something different. You know, you get a transformation, not just an imitation.
Right, so you talked about institutions and that needing to have institutions that represent that. If they're not there now, what are they? What are they going to look like, or what should they look like? What should they be, I guess, is maybe a better
question. I think in some sense futurists are authoritarians trying to impose their idea of the future on us. So
it's I just mean the next year.
It's important that it be organic. But it seems to me that we would understand some basic stuff like children have been best raised with a larger proportion of adults than children, best raised by both men and women, so they understand that both men and women can be loving and nurturing and patient and so on, and we don't reproduce the gender roles by the way we raise our kids. They somehow look at, you know, 'cause we do what we see, not what we're told. That the workplace is much more one of flexibility and just no longer based on the old idea that one person is bringing home a paycheck for the whole family. Ironically, I think some of the fact that work is returning to the home because of computers and so on will give it's giving us somewhat more flexibility, that the bottom line of our work life is not only the paycheck, but also the satisfaction and the degree to which we can use our talents and we're happy to go to work and we really want affirmatively
universal
to go to work.
Universal hopes, yes.
Yes, right, absolutely. But as long as we think in terms of male-female roles and winner-loser, up-down, yin-yang, you know, subject-object, we're cooked, you know, because then we're stuck with those roles, regardless of who we are as a unique individual as we come into this world.
Gloria Steinem, thanks for talking with us. This is KUOW.